This week, one of the most popular authors in the world dares authorities to arrest her over her speech. Are some doctors and parents conspiring to help certain students test into Ivy League schools? And Satan will get a chance to open a future county meeting in Michigan. These stories and much more coming up this week on The Lion, Week in Review.
Welcome in to this week's edition of The Lion, Week in Review. It's a weekly look at the culture, the courts, your state capitol, and your kids. I'm Chris Stigall. Now, let's meet our panel, some of the men and women behind the stories at readlion.com. Michael Ryan is the executive editor here at The Lion. Liam Siegler, a Herzog Foundation ambassador. And Faith Perkins, staff writer at The Lion. Good to see you guys. Welcome.
Thank you.
We start this week, Faith, in another story about a satanic temple. I never know whether these satanic stories in county or government offices and schools, if they're for real or if it's just a goof to make a point. What do you know about it?
I don't think in this case. I think they're just trying to make a point. So on March 18th, the Satanic Temple of West Michigan announced that they would be delivering the opening prayer at the April 23rd meeting at Ottawa County Board of Commissioners. And this comes a year after one of their members, Bender Bone, went to the meeting and actually announced their interest in delivering the prayers.
I read a story about the solar eclipse in the month of April, and there were some prisoners that said, Michael, that they wanted to see the solar eclipse, and they've been in lockdown, the prison. They can't go out to see it because, the prison officials are afraid they'll hurt themselves staring at the sun. That's not a joke. And so the prisoners hired an attorney and said that they believe the solar eclipse is a religious event, that they're being prohibited from going to watch. So I guess anything now counts as a religious event, Michael.
Yeah, apparently so.
Satanic temple prayers are religious, I guess, right?
Yeah, and and one of the goals, the member says, is to make Ottawa County, Michigan, a place where Satanism will grow and thrive. And this person is also excited to celebrate the holidays with the residents of Ottawa County, as we are always looking forward to opportunities where our goat display would be a fitting representation for the satanic community. Or you could get your own holiday. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. One of the critics says they are not practicing religion. They are a group of unserious individuals resorting to cheap theatrics. Maybe like, prisoners going out to see the
solar eclipse.
Yes. But at bottom, the courts are pretty ill-equipped to deal with this because, freedom of religion. So it's going to be up to the community to decide how to respond to this. Do you protest it? Do you ignore it? What do you do?
Yeah, Liam, I interviewed a gentleman not too long ago. His whole organization is dedicated to introducing scripture into public school days, taking kids off campus, teaching them about the Bible, taking them back, called LifeWise Academy.
Yeah.
And I asked him about this thing, Satan clubs in school. And he said, I don't fear it. And he said, it's anything at the marketplace of ideas. Okay, bring on your Satan club. We'll give you the Bible and we'll see who wins.
Yeah. I think if you look at the motives and the intentions and the words, the people who are leading these Satan clubs or these satanic temples, the founder of the Satanic Temple actually is a prophet. He's purposely doing it to provoke religious people to try and ban the satanic icons or religious symbols or figures for them to get any type of religious symbolism out of the public square. So really, it's a ploy to provoke people with the end goal in mind to get to have the separation between church and state grow even wider.
Not so much they want opportunity to speak. They'd rather make the point that no one should be allowed.
Right. And really, the solution for religious people should be to laugh at it, give it a little chuckle, but ultimately to ignore it, because by giving into the provocation, there's a potential lawsuit that's down the line. And unfortunately, the Satanic Temple is a protected religious organization by the IRS. So there's kind of that tension too. Are they really a religion? But legally they are a religion, so they can claim that we're protected underneath the First Amendment.
And so Faith, this meeting, April 23rd, is that a green light? They will be leading the prayer, or we don't know that yet for sure?
Yes, so they're still scheduled to go ahead and lead the prayer, even though there has been calls for them to not, and there's also been threats of a lawsuit.
Ottawa County Board of Commissioners. That'll be a spicy one in West Michigan. We'll watch that on April 23rd. To Maine we go, where Liam, our colleague, has written about an abortion rights amendment. This is popping up in Florida now. I think Arizona is going to see it. I think several states are trying to introduce and codify abortion into their constitutions now that it's a state-by-state issue, but it didn't work in Maine.
Yeah, several states have done so. There was an amendment in Kansas, in California, in New York, in Ohio. And this is something that we're starting to see pro-abortion advocates do because abortion is no longer a protected constitutional right under Roe v. Wade because of the recent decision. States are resorting to this tactic, and Maine is the most recent one to do so. There was a proposed amendment that if pass would have codified abortion rights into the state constitution. It was proposed as a bill, and if the bill was to be passed, it would have sent a referendum to the citizens of Maine to vote on in November's election.
So different than a signature petition, which I think other states have,
yes.
Signatures to get on a ballot, right?
Yes, so this was a piece of legislation to create a referendum because they're amending the state constitution.
I see.
So but in order to do that, you have to have a supermajority in both the House and the Senate. And so the bill was introduced in the state Senate, and unanimously, all the Republicans voted against it, basically preventing it from going any further.
It's really interesting because, Michael, I think even in states like Missouri, where we sit today, and as I said, Florida, Arizona, this is largely a growing movement that's showing up on a lot of ballots this fall. Maine, one of the few to stop it, so they don't have a citizen petition-driven referendum. What do you think the politics of this mean for the fall, or could you even imagine?
Oh, I think it's huge for the fall. The Florida law is going to draw out a lot of opposition in November. The tactic on the left, the pro-abortion side, seems to be to wipe out any chance that a legislature has to have restrictions on abortion now that they can, mm-hmm. under expanded restrictions under Roe, and do away with any ability to enact regulations, even those that were okay under Roe, and even those that protect the safety of women, and which is, in Kansas, the Supreme Court has said that the legislature does not have an absolute right to restrict abortion, even for safety. So we'll see how that happens. The resolution in Maine would have asked folks whether they wanted a constitutional amendment declaring that every person has a right to personal reproductive autonomy. Nobody talks about personal reproductive responsibility, which may be the key to autonomy.
Faith, I'll put you on the spot a little bit because you are the resident lady of the panel today. This is purely an opinion question because I was asking this rhetorically of just kind of broadly some people I was talking to earlier this morning. When this shows up on state ballots, we know that women overwhelmingly support the idea of access to abortion. It's just a fact. Whether you do or not is neither here nor there, but women just generally do. Could you imagine that women would vote to legalize abortion in their state and still vote for a Republican? Could you imagine that scenario? Because I think a lot of people think that if abortion's on the ballot, that means they're going to show up, vote for abortion, and vote for the Democrat on the ticket. And there are some that would say, I don't think that's necessarily true. Do you have an opinion on that, just as a female?
Yeah, I think there's several people that I know that would vote to keep abortion legal but still vote Republican.
That's a fascinating thing, and I'm going to watch that a lot this fall, as we've seen that on the ballot, like I said, in Florida, and I think it's going to happen in Arizona, it looks like, too. So we move on now, Michael, to North Carolina and their school choice program. What's going on there?
Well, they've had a school choice program, a limited one, for a decade, and last year, North Carolina made it universal. The only thing limiting that universality is the fact that you need money for it, and they don't have enough money for everybody that wants it. They had 72,000 applications for the Universal Opportunity Scholarships, too many, and they're turning people away. Now, that will grow. This coming school year, the funding is $191 million. That will jump $415 million in the next year, and then $15 million increases year after year. the question is, you know, all that money goes into education. Isn't that kind of the point? but, you know, the governor's against it.
Yeah.
And so even now, with all this...
was North Carolina, sorry to interrupt, but yeah. North Carolina was the legislature in a supermajority passed school choice despite the governor's veto. Did they override the governor's veto? Is that my memory?
No, I don't recall about that.
Sorry to put you
But he is against it.
Yeah.
And he's against it even now when there's so much demand for it that they can't fulfill all the demand. He says the private schools don't have to tell taxpayers what they teach, how their students perform, and whether students even show up at all. A lot of cases, public schools aren't telling people that.
Sure.
But, you know, his constituents like it. He wants to deny it to them. I'm wondering, what kind of governor does that?
North Carolina is an interesting state. It's considered kind of purplishly and politically. Mm-hmm. See, it seems you have a legislature, like I said, that seems overwhelmingly supportive of school choice, a governor who's not. I wonder who ends up winning that day.
Yeah, I mean, I think school choice is winning, and I think it'll continue to win. I think if you look at the results, the demand is like they're giving the majority of the money to tier one families. A tier one family is a household making under $58,000, which is not a lot of money. So these scholarships are going to families that are underserviced, that probably don't like their public school and want to have options for their kids. And it's really a remarkable thing that now they're empowered. They're empowered to make better decisions for their families. And so that's a victory. And we're going to see countless stories in the coming years just testifying to the power of school choice policy.
Yeah, I wonder if you would counsel, Faith, if you were a political advisor to a candidate in these states, would you say run on this issue of school choice? Do you think state by state, as you've written about these, you see it as the winner just about everywhere you cover it?
Oh, absolutely. And you see, even in this case, that in 2000, I think in 13, they only had like 1,500 people that wanted to sign up, and now we're having 72 applicants. So it's largely a majority wants it.
The story of J.K. Rowling is a fascinating one. This is the author who is most well-known, I think, for her Harry Potter book series, overwhelmingly popular. She's a fabulously wealthy lady. She's, I would say, between the films and the books and the play and all of that, the merchandise, she's pretty well set for the rest of her days, which makes her an interesting figure, Michael, in that she's not going to be cowed by cancel culture. She's already made her money, I think.
Yes, there's a new hate crime law in Scotland in which, you know, if you post anything that's derogatory toward the trans community, you risk being arrested. And of course, you know, J.K. Rowling being as big as she is, she's too big to jail. They're not going to arrest her, and they've already made it clear they're not going to.
She posted on X or something, come arrest me, come and get me, right?
Yeah,
something like that?
Yeah. You know, these are thought crimes that not even Orwell could have imagined. In fact, they're not hate crimes. They're disagreement crimes. If you disagree with the prevailing, PC view that's going on, Rowling says that the law allows politicians to misogynistically or opportunistically devalue the rights and freedoms of actual women and girls in favor of the feelings of men who just pretend to be women. And, you know, it's not even, you don't even have to insult somebody. It's the feeling of insult that they claim to have that can get you in trouble.
Liam, I was reading a piece at Axios this week that said there's a new preference for calling people who struggle with obesity. And I'm a guy, I've been a fat guy most of my life. But you're not supposed to say I'm obese anymore. You're supposed to say I have obesity. Yep. As to not hurt my feelings. This is a kind of a cousin to this story of words now hurting people's feelings.
Yeah, it's not disconnected by any means, and I think that's a good thing to bring up because we're living in a very therapeutic culture where now we've redefined harm and we've redefined feeling unsafe as feeling as the same thing as mentally challenged or offended. And we're seeing all of our institutions kind of just change their policies towards like this therapeutic language. And especially in Europe, it's a little more escalated while now they're embodying that ideology into law. And it's completely untenable. Like you look at what like police are saying, they're saying this is enforceable. Like we can't enforce this law because it would require like just think of the potential ramifications. Like, you have a disagreement with somebody in your household, and like a family member outs you to the police because you said something offensive. It's like, where are the boundaries? Like, where's the line between like dystopian and, yeah, you know? But I mean, as J.K. Rowling said, she's just calling out the patent absurdity of it. Like, it's unenforceable. And really, like, what human beings need is we need people to disagree with us. We need people to be able to freely speak opinion and truth in a way that challenges us. And you'll be okay, I think. You'll be okay.
Michael, we live in a country where we're really not even prosecuting or stopping shoplifting anymore. I mean, it's kind of amazing that we'd be talking about arresting people for words, you know?
Well, and there have been some videos online recently in which alleged FBI agents have stopped by people's homes to talk to them, just to talk to them, about some of their social media posts, which is a little chilling, especially in the land of the First Amendment. Mm. But, you know, the law in Scotland would basically outlaw, make a crime out of hurting other people's feelings.
Amazing. Amazing. Faith, back to you on a story that you can read at readline.com. Parents trying to get their kids into fancy schools. We know that there's been a scandal not too terribly long ago about celebrity parents faking their kids' way into certain schools. Now, even at the Ivy League level, we're talking about what? Falsifying mental health problems, perhaps? Is that what's going on?
Yes. So parents of high school students that go to elite prep schools are taking their children to doctors seeking letters that say that they have ADHD, anxiety, depression, or other psychological disabilities in order to get up to 50% more time on ACTs and SAT scores.
More time?
Yeah.
So if they're diagnosed with one of those things, the school has to, by rule or something, give them more time on the test?
Yes.
Is that the goal?
Yeah, up to 50% more time. And it's increasing their score by up to 200 points on the SAT.
Wow. And they have found that parents are, in fact, they can prove, or they've caught parents falsifying these or getting doctors to, what, fake the diagnosis?
Yes.
Wow. Michael, this makes a doctor complicit too, does it not?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, one expert says it should raise suspicions when a student receives a sudden diagnosis late in high school and never had a diagnosis before, never had an individual educational plan before, but all of a sudden this test is coming up and you go out there and get one. It does put the doctors under the gun. You remember in 2019, we had a case where the rich and famous were paying to rig test scores and athletic accomplishments to get their little, you know, their children into elite schools.
The actress Felicity Huffman went to prison for a little bit for that.
People were jailed for that.
Yeah.
And you just have to wonder, how is this any less scandalous?
It's true. And again, doctors may be involved, Liam. I mean, that's pretty bad.
Actually, like, one of the critiques of this is just the lack of transparency. Like, there's no process. So what actually the majority of parents are doing is just claiming that their kid has a mental disability, like ADHD or depression, that would prevent them from doing the test with the normal amount of time. But the schools aren't requiring the parents to submit, like, a letter from a doctor or, like, a mental diagnosis. So for the majority of these cases, and this is like where the scandal is, it's just like they're letting this happen. And I mean, going back to the previous story, this is another symptom of the therapeutic culture that we're living in. It's like we're, I mean, in order to get an advantage, people are taking, are exploiting like these weaknesses in the system.
Yeah. And Ivy League schools in particular, I mean, you had this story with the story of the kind of, if you want, affirmative action entrance for students that don't test as well as some superior students in their testing. And, you know, really great students are being passed over, Michael, for this kind of affirmative action admissions policy. Ivy League schools, to me, seem like they're cutting their legs out from under themselves in terms of their prestige.
Yeah, absolutely. And applications are going down as a result. But, you know, this particular maneuver to get a diagnosis or just identify, as you were saying, Leon, that you have ADHD or whatever, it not only cheats your fellow students, but it especially cheats the students with actual disabilities that have been there all along.
Yeah. Amazing.
It's not preparing you for life.
Yeah.
No, it's not. And now, Michael, this is an interesting one. I love this headline. The teacher Fox News warned you about. I assume that's meant as a pejorative, that headline. Yeah. What do we know?
Well, this is a teacher starting an LGBTQ club in this California school district in Elk Grove without any knowledge of the parents.
Uh-huh.
And it was over lunch on campus, and so there was no parental notification required. But the teacher that did this, I guess, found a shirt that said, "I'm the teacher that Fox News warns you about," and kind of regaled in that.
By the way, I would change that to the lion. She's the teacher the lion has warned about. You guys have written plenty about this.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
I beat you
to the punchline.
The parents sent a cease and desist letter to the district on March 21st, calling the UBU meetings a, quote, district-sanctioned, rogue, unregulated lunchtime club. And then when the parents objected, they were treated like bigots by the school, apparently. I remember a time when you couldn't get aspirin from the school nurse without parental notification. And so I asked, can teachers start any kind of club without parents knowing? I mean, would this have been a shooting club? Would this have been a Bible club?
Oh, yeah. Great question. And Liam, this is the kind of thing that continues to pop up week after week after week. Professionals in schools and school districts insisting on doing these things that are kept secret from parents. It blows my mind that we're here, but we're here.
Yeah, and it's completely unethical. And I mean, we talk a lot about how the school, public school system should be a place where church and state is separated, but we're seeing something that's a de facto religion, like gender and sexual ideology, and people thinking that they have a responsibility to inculcate those values into their students despite what parents may or may not say about it, and then to have the audacity to castigate these parents as like bigots and like crazy people. It's unfair, it's unethical, and ultimately it hurts the trust that families have in the public school system, because I mean, you want to be able to send your kid and to know that they're going to be like loved and cared for, and they're actually going to learn without having things that shouldn't even be in the state's curriculum just like propagated to their students.
Yeah.
And especially like not without their consent or knowledge. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, transparency seems to matter. It's kind of a cousin to the story, Faith, we started the show off with today, and the satanic temple wanting to open the Board of Commissioners meeting in prayer. It's like, at least do it out in the open. Give parents the knowledge of what's going on, and then parents can make an informed decision, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listen, before we wrap up today, we always like to ask the Lion team about their favorite stories of the week, stories that they particularly want to draw your attention to. So, Faith, we start with you. What do you like particularly at the Lion this week?
So my favorite one right now is from Michael Ryan, and it's called Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk's appearance at KU Wednesday to test campus security students' beliefs.
Ah, very good. So you, the Jayhawks gave him some trouble, did they, Michael?
Well, not yet.
Not yet.
It's going on tonight.
Okay.
Right.
As we record.
We're recording on Wednesday.
Are they pledging trouble for him? Have you read or heard?
They've heard rumors.
Okay.
But it's my favorite story, too, because I want to find out what happened.
Well, Liam, your favorite story of the week.
Yeah, I am always interested in what's happening in the courts. The Florida Supreme Court just upheld Ron DeSantis's 6-week abortion ban, which is pretty significant. It's a milestone for the state. They previously had a 15-1, and they passed a 6-week ban. And so now, presumably, if there's going to be a challenge to it, it would go to the Supreme Court. So it's a really good development for life.
And the Supreme Court probably is not going to take it up, which means that's on the ballot this fall, which means I'll just ask your prediction. So Florida, which has been traditionally a red state, Ron DeSantis has done well. Trump, Biden, abortion on the ballot in Florida. How do you think that shakes out? A lot of people, the Wall Street Journal wrote this week that they think that that could make Florida a purple state.
It's very possible. What you're going to see is a lot of outside money pour into the state of Florida to advocate against the 6-week ban. I don't know the language of what's going to be on the ballot, but because I'm assuming Republican legislators like wrote the language, it'd be a little more clear about what people are voting for. It's really hard to tell. Like, the landscape is very murky right now, but I think it's a step in the right direction.
And Michael, you'll have more on the KU story at readlion.com as well, yes?
Yes, and if past is, to your question, if past is prologue, all the public votes so far have gone the pro-abortion way.
Yeah, that will be one of the most fascinating things to watch this November, I believe, is what's going to happen in Florida as DeSantis advocates for it. We'll see how successful DeSantis can be. That is going to do it for us this week, folks. Glad that you could be here. I hope you'll keep up to date on every story, all the latest news at readlion.com. In the meantime, for all of us at The Lion, we thank you for downloading the show, and we'll see you next time.